While politicians debate immigration policy, in the past year, just under 1,000 refugees made their way to Iowa, people who arrived here with very little and set about rebuilding their lives. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, refugees in Iowa will profile the groups that are helping newcomers make their way here. I'll talk with Hillary Burbank of Global Greens, Dr. William Story about the challenges of providing health care to refugees, Juanita Scott of the Children's Clothes Closet in Panora, Amy Doyle of the Ethnic Minorities of Burma Advocacy and Resource Center, and Andy Coghill-Behrens of the Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, refugees in Iowa. When refugees arrive in the United States, many have been through months or even years of struggle. They often arrive here with very little, but with strong motivation to rebuild their lives and take advantage of the opportunities life in the United States can offer. This hour, we're going to set aside the arguments about immigration and how many refugees the United States and Iowa can and should accept. We're going to focus on the groups in Iowa that help refugees that find their way here to survive and even thrive. My first guest today is Hillary Burbank. She's program supervisor for Global Greens, a project of Lutheran Services in Iowa. Global Greens is an agricultural program. It provides guidance, education, and business development training for refugees in the Des Moines metro area that are interested in or have experience in agriculture. Hello, Hillary.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And let's go back to 2011. Global Greens is a fairly new program, but tell me what the impetus was for starting this program.
Yeah, so it was a trip. It was a trip out to Washington, D.C. Our now director, he was taking a group of kind of ethnic community leaders out to Washington, D.C. for a conference with the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And for a lot of those folks, it was their very first time leaving the city of Des Moines since they'd resettled to the United States. And on that drive, they saw a lot of farmland and literally stopped the car and just said, got out to look around and say, you know, like, there's so much land here. We didn't even know this existed. So the kind of the question started from there of how do we get some of this land? This is what our folks knew how to do when they're home. This is what we've loved to do. So really just taking that back to the community and looking for land for people to get into to garden and then to farm was kind of the impetus for it.
So you're talking about refugees who come from rural backgrounds. And of course, most refugees, just because of the way things work when people get here, most refugees do settle in urban areas, not in rural areas. So the idea that there was all this land and this agricultural environment in Iowa was something that within the city of Des Moines was even hard to see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So where were the people that you started working with, where were they coming from?
Yeah, so in our agriculture program, a lot of the folks that have kind of taken to it have been from the various communities from Burma. There's a lot of different ethnic groups that have been resettled from Burma, and then also from Burundi, Rwanda, Congo, the Central African region. And then we have some Sudanese, and then some folks from Bhutan near Nepal that have really, really taken to agriculture and want to pursue gardening and farming here.
So once you identified this need and the desire on the part of these refugees to do something with agriculture, you're in Des Moines, which there's not a lot of farmland in Des Moines these days. How did you get started? What can you do for people?
Yeah, so we started with gardens. So we started just partnering with the City of Des Moines Parks and Recreation department, who have community gardens already, but we started identifying areas where a lot of families had been resettled, apartment complexes where there was large concentrations of families, and talked to the city and worked with starting some gardens in those areas. And then over the years, it's just been so many different connections of people finding out about our program or just kind of chance connections with people who happen to have land. We partner with some churches, different organizations, even private landowners. And that's kind of continued the garden portion of our program. So we want to keep that option open for people who just want a garden that's accessible walking distance from their home, being able to connect with the land in that way. And then in 2013, we were able to partner with Valley Church out in West Des Moines, which is out near the Jordan Creek area. And that's where Secretary Northey actually attends church and connected us that they actually
Bill Northey, the Secretary of Agriculture in Iowa.
Yes, yes. So they actually had 35 acres of land kind of landlocked in this West Des Moines suburb. So we are on 6.5 acres out there, able to farm and at a little bit larger scale. And then we are working with some landowners here around the Des Moines area, maybe a little bit more outside, that have just learned about our program and have some farmers who are moving off of the training farm site and starting larger scale businesses. So those have just all been different connections that we've made.
So you have your own urban farm, this training farm. How many individuals are involved on that farm?
Yeah, so we have, last year we had 24 families that were farming out there. They were on a range from about a 50 by 50 foot plot up to a quarter acre. And then we have three families that are moving, kind of transitioning off the farm, and they range from an acre and a half to 2 acres, to three acres that they're farming on. So we're kind of in a transition period with a few of our farmers, because kind of the end, I wouldn't say the end, but the for some of our farmers who really want to move off and start their own businesses, we're constantly looking for places where they can grow larger and larger.
And what is your background? How did you get involved with Global Greens?
Yeah, I'm from Des Moines. During my time in high school, was able to attend Central Campus downtown, and that's where I was first exposed to who refugees were, got to volunteer in a ESL classroom at that point, and just kind of fell in love with the people that I met, and started volunteering at Lutheran Services in Iowa, became an AmeriCorps Vista with them, and then just also had a personal interest in farming, gardening. I grew up in Des Moines. It wasn't a large part of my background, but have lived on a farm, done some kind of work for your keep type of arrangements. And when I came back after my Vista year, I was able to be a part of just starting the Global Greens program and really seeing it grow. So it's just fit a lot of my interests in working with refugee families, but also with the local food movement.
So with the families that you're working with, many of them have agricultural backgrounds and have grown or farmed in the countries that they come from. What do you teach them? What's the focus? Because they probably know quite a bit about growing food.
Yes, definitely. Our farmers teach us a lot. And I mean, they're sustenance farmers, so they were growing everything that they ate, including caring for livestock. So they're really have a lot to teach us about what it means to eat locally and to be connected to your food. A lot of our training revolves around seasonality, where to get things, how to do seed orders here, where to get supplies, and then also the market system, because our systems of selling food and are so different from other countries and very complicated.
When refugees come to the United States, they have very little control over where they end up going within the United States. Obviously, after somebody gets settled and learns their way around and learns how they want to live in this country, they can go wherever they want, if they have the means to do that. But you're working with people who didn't choose to come to Iowa and, didn't say, hey, that's a farming state. I have a farming background. I want to be there.
Yeah.
So these are people who are looking for opportunity, looking for ways to make a living and survive and thrive in the United States. As you help them hone their farming skills, learn about small business skills, that kind of thing, I can imagine that then the next step would be to transition to an area where they could rent their own land. Are you helping people make that transition?
Yeah, that's definitely the goal. So we have a few families that are, one family is farming in Van Meter, another in Carlisle, and then another in Altoona, and renting from different landowners who have learned about our program and those are just leases. So, but we are definitely talking with people who, a lot of our farmers would love to have livestock at some point and live on the land. So it's all about finding what would be the right distance from their markets and where there's enough of a hub to sell their food, but also works for their family. I mean, some of them do have family in the Des Moines school system. So there's some questions about, you know, where they would go to school and transitioning to a community where they might not have as many people from their own country there. So, but it's definitely something that our farmers are open to as their businesses grow.
Well, and I was going to ask you that, too, because, you know, in our larger cities, we have a more cosmopolitan environment. Mm-hmm. And in our rural areas, we have a much more homogeneous population that may be less welcoming to people from other countries. Do you also help refugees with that transition, the idea that they may be moving somewhere where they may be the first person from their country that anyone has ever met?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't gotten to that point yet, so it'll be interesting to see that happen. I feel like this program is just such a great connector for people to meet those new folks in their communities, too, though, especially through being at farmers markets and the connection of food that is a huge connection for all of us. So I think that through just like what they're doing innately, being in those communities would be such a good connector for people. And I think just the connection of farming and the love that people in Iowa have of farming could be a really big connector as well.
Now, you have actually, with your training farm, also started a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, so people can buy shares.
Yes.
And you're selling the crops that you're growing?
Yeah. So, yeah, the markets are a really big piece of what we're trying to develop with our program, because our farmers can grow a lot of food and they want more land, and there's kind of an endless potential of how much food we can be producing here. So we have a farmer's market that we run at our office during the summer, as well as the farmers go downtown and sell, and then also on the Iowa Food Co-op and a couple of other places. But this is the second year of our CSA. So our registration page should be going live by the end of this month, and that's something where people can sign up to receive a share throughout the season of produce that our farmers are growing.
So you have about 200 people who are part of the program right now. You have a long, long waiting list of people who want to be part of the program, too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what if people are listening to this idea and thinking, oh, that's an exciting way to help people make a living in this country, make their way in this country. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for? How can people get involved?
Yeah. So, I mean, land is always a big piece of our program. So not only land outside of the city, but also in the city. We always are looking for spaces for community gardens for people to just be able to grow some of their crops from home and have that connection. And then land outside of the city, usually fairly close to Des Moines, is kind of the level we're at this point. And then a big exciting part of our program is just it's easy to be involved as a customer, because our farmers are starting businesses. So you can buy food from our farmers and get awesome vegetables and then be able to support their small businesses. So through the farmers market, through the CSA.
Well, Hillary, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hillary Burbank is Program Supervisor for Global Greens, a project of Lutheran Services in Iowa, providing an agricultural program to refugees who come to the Des Moines metro area. This hour, we're focusing on programs around the state of Iowa that offer assistance to new refugees in the state. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about refugees in Iowa and focusing on the groups around the state that offer assistance to newcomers to the state, to refugees who make their way here and other immigrant groups as well. With me now is Dr. William Story. He's assistant professor in the Department of Community and Behavioral Health in the College of Public Health at the University of Iowa. He's involved in an effort to better provide health care to refugees who've come here from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Approximately 240 Congolese refugees came to Johnson County in 2016. Dr. Story, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And you've been involved in a fundraising campaign to create an organization or fund an organization to provide health care for Congolese refugees in Johnson County. Tell me about the need that you're trying to meet.
Yeah, well, I'm a relatively new assistant professor here, just been here for a year and a half in the College of Public Health. And most of my work actually happens outside of the United States, in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. That's where I do a lot of my work related to maternal and child health and helping moms and kids get access to health care. And then I realized that there are people in our own community here in Johnson County who are struggling getting access to health care, who are coming from some of the countries in which I work. So, I right away wanted to get involved, and I started learning more as much as I could just in the past 6 months about our community of refugees here in Iowa City and Johnson County.
So was there a specific incident that drew your attention to this and made you think, oh, this is a problem I need to get involved in helping to solve?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually had been on campus maybe 6 months when a family physician came into my office, Denise Martinez, and she works on a clinic on the southeast side of Iowa City, and she told me about some outcomes that she had been seeing in her clinic, and was wondering if there's something that we could do. You know, some people weren't able to get access to care in time, particularly during pregnancy and childbirth, and you know, the care is there. It's just a matter of getting there and making sure you're integrated into the health system. And there are some struggles there. Obviously, being brand new to an area, you can imagine that it would be quite difficult. So when she's telling me these stories, it sounded really familiar based on a lot of the work that I'd done outside of the United States. But again, happening here in my backyard in Iowa City. So I said, yeah, absolutely. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can get some resources to make a difference.
So in particular, mothers and babies really at risk because they weren't getting the care that they needed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's not just, you know, it's not just during that time, but that's an area where we really wanted to sort of rally behind, because I feel like any community can sort of identify with the health of moms and kids, and really realizing that's kind of the social fabric of a community, so making sure that those kids are healthy.
So it's my understanding that refugees who come to the United States, come to Iowa, can have access to health services through Medicaid. What wasn't happening? What's not happening that is helping people or failing to help people get the care they need?
Sure. You know, when a primary refugee, somebody who's actually moving to Iowa as their primary settlement area, coming from either refugee camp or their home country, they have the opportunity to go through an initial refugee health assessment, which is done at a lot of county health departments. Johnson County is partnering with Linn County to do those health assessments, but a lot of people aren't aware that those health assessments exist, and they're both to identify any diseases people may have coming here, both infectious or chronic diseases that may be going on, but also to link them to a primary care provider. So if you're not getting that initial assessment, it's sometimes hard to get connected to a primary care provider. And then once you establish a relationship with a primary care provider, you can meet some of those other health needs, including antenatal care or prenatal care during pregnancy. But it's establishing that initial connection. And so we're hoping to work with both families to raise awareness that there are opportunities to get connected, but also raising awareness among physicians and health systems, both here in Iowa City and really across Iowa, hopefully developing a model of care where refugees can get access to care independent of the type of health insurance that they have.
So do you see this as a healthcare problem or a communication problem or both?
Yes. Well, yeah, really both. So this is really a learning experience for me and my team as we're going through this. But, we're going to be working on both sides of it, you know, partnering with both a family physician, Dr. Martinez, that I'd mentioned, so to work on sort of the healthcare side of things, making sure that people have access to insurance, or if they don't, making sure that they still have access to care, have access to translation services for those who don't speak English or are coming here right away. And need those types of services. On the other side, just raising awareness with the community of the benefits of working through a health system, getting to know their providers, whether it's an obstetrician or a primary care provider, to make sure that they feel comfortable and establish that trust. We all know that trusting your physician is an important thing, and if you're brand new to an area, it might be take a little bit longer to build that trust.
Is there something about this population, the refugees coming from the Democratic Republic of Congo, that puts them at particular risk when it comes to healthcare?
I don't know that this particular population, you know, when you think of refugees coming from another country, it's just adapting to a brand new health system. You know, I've traveled a lot to different countries, again, in parts of Africa, and the health system and the healthcare is very different. And so you have to kind of get used to what it is. The reason we're focusing specifically on that population is just because it's growing so rapidly here in Johnson County. We're just getting a lot of primary and secondary refugees. The secondary refugees are refugees who are, you know, settled in a different state or maybe a different area, and then are moving to Iowa City to be nearer to family or to get a job or something. So we're just seeing a really big influx, like you said, almost 240 refugees just in the past year. Maybe I've heard estimates between 1,000 to 2,000 in this area who are living here now. And I don't think a lot of people are aware that we have such a vibrant community of refugees that we'd really like to not only help in providing access to care, but really integrate into our community and enjoy the benefits that community has to offer as well.
As I mentioned earlier, when people qualify for refugee status and finally make their way to the United States, sometimes that is part of a very long journey that has lasted many months, often many years. So many of the people who have come here from the Congo have been living in refugee camps for a long time before they make their way to the United States. And I don't know this for a fact, but I would guess healthcare is probably a real crisis in those refugee camps as well. Is that part of the problem?
Absolutely. You know, for what we're looking at, not as much because we just want to make sure that they're getting access to care. But that's part of what that initial refugee health assessment, you know, there are some water and sanitation issues in these refugee camps, getting it, like you said, identifying maybe chronic diseases, maybe somebody has diabetes or high blood pressure that hasn't been identified because they don't have access to care from those camps. And you're right, some families are living there 9, 10 years in these camps. So somebody from the Democratic Republic of Congo may be living in Tanzania, where, again, they're adapting to new culture, new language in that country, and then they're moving to the United States and to the Midwest and trying to adapt here as well. Yeah, we want to identify some of those needs that maybe have built up over time due to a lack of access to care. So that is definitely important in helping them get integrated here. But we also want to just make sure that standard of care, especially when moms are pregnant, is there so that they can have that consistent care that they need.
Of course, care for pregnant women is important. Care for infants is important. But as children grow in the United States, obviously, you know, we make sure that children go to the doctor on a regular basis. They are up to date on vaccinations, that kind of thing. Is that a big challenge as well, making sure that the children of these refugee families have access to the vaccinations that they need?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that is too. And that's an area that has been brought up a number of times. I was just at a meeting a few weeks ago here in Iowa City at a local church where there are almost 100 people there, both from the refugee community and people who are wanting to serve refugees here. And immunizations came up as a big factor. Both people were going to Des Moines or Riverside to get immunizations, but there are places here in Johnson County and Linn County where they can get immunizations. But we want to make sure that communication is clear, that they know how to get there, what, you know, vaccines that they need, and just to make it more accessible. So working with places like Johnson County Public Health to see if we can get those types of services more available. If schools are providing those, which many are as well here in the Iowa City area, making sure that people are aware of that and how they can get access to those vaccines.
And I mentioned earlier that you were part of a fundraising effort to raise money to increase access to health care for this refugee population. A successful fundraiser, you raised what, about $10,000 or so. Where does that money go? What do you do now?
Absolutely. No, we were just really amazed and humbled by the response of people in our community here in Johnson County, but really across the U.S., people responded. I think there is just a real desire to do something and to welcome people who are coming brand new into an area. So yeah, it was a really tremendous opportunity to see the response from the community. And now what's next is working with the community to respond. So they sort of responded to our call, hey, we need help, and now we're going to give back. And so we're putting our team together now. We're going to meet in the next couple of weeks to put our plan together. But we'll be working with local organizations that are already serving the refugee population, but maybe aren't meeting this healthcare need gap. So we hope to fill that gap. We'll be working with the health systems here in Johnson County and Iowa City. We'll be working with local health departments, again, to sort of make that access to care more streamlined so that people can get the assessment that they need and then get connected to primary care provider. So we have a number of steps that we want to tackle, and this is a long-term relationship. You know, this initial campaign was to get up and going as the College of Public Health and working together with the College of Medicine, but we really want this to be a long-term relationship with the refugee community and to continue that ongoing to meet other needs outside of sort of this initial maternal and child health needs.
Well, and this effort, this fundraising effort focused on healthcare needs for the Congolese population, is this are you hoping to serve other refugees as well, or are you just going to continue to focus your services on this specific population?
Yeah, I think, again, it's a starting point, but absolutely we'd like to extend it to other refugee populations. Again, this is one of the largest in our area, but that doesn't mean that the needs of the others are any less important. So we would like to extend it to other refugees. And if we can develop a model of care here in Johnson County, we'd love to extend that to other counties in Iowa that are working in similar areas and also trying to meet the needs of the refugees as related to health care. So, yeah, we hope to meet the needs of a more diverse refugee population and then extend that model to other areas in Iowa.
Dr. Story, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Dr. William Story, assistant professor in the Department of Community and Behavioral Health at the College of Public Health at the University of Iowa. He's been involved in an effort to provide better health care to refugees who've come to Johnson County from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And my next guest is Juanita Scott of the Children's Clothes Closet in Panora, Iowa, in the western part of central Iowa, an organization designed to help connect low-income families and individuals with gently used clothing and the goods that they need. When the organization was founded in 2001, the idea was to help low-income families in Guthrie County, but they quickly found a need that was greater than they imagined and discovered that there were also many new immigrants to Iowa who needed their help. Hello, Juanita.
Hello. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you for being here today. And when you opened back in 2001, like I said, the idea was to serve low-income families in Guthrie County. How did you discover that there was this much greater need that you could be a part of?
Well, first of all, it was 2002. We were working before 2002 to get it established, but our first opening was the first Saturday of August in 2002.
All right. So tell me about this need that you became aware of.
Well, we had a lady that came to our church from Indianola, and she had worked with a group in that town where they sold used clothing to people. They had a little kind of a warehouse that they set up. She wanted to do something, and she went to our minister and said, "Would you be interested? We have an empty building that the church owns just north of our church. Could we set it up in there?" So he said, "Find out if it's needed." And she traveled to every school in our county and talked either to the principal, the secretary, or the school nurse, and every single person she talked to told her there was a tremendous need, because they would see children coming in without coats. They would see them coming in without good boots or shoes or just any number of things. And the schools did the best they could to keep a few supplies on hand to help these children. But they were very excited to hear about this.
And it's grown and grown. How many families did you work with in 2016?
We had 296 families. And there was a total of 1,050 children helped.
Wow.
Yes, wow.
And
I have a statistics here from 2011, and at that time we had 195 families and a total of children of 575. So look how it's grown just since 2011.
Wow, yeah. So you've got families that are mostly coming in from Guthrie and Greene County, but you're also getting families coming from farther afield. Where are people coming from?
Well, we're getting them from all the surrounding counties. We're getting Greene, Adair, Audubon, Dallas, Guthrie. We discourage people from coming out from the bigger counties up in Des Moines because they have facilities there too. We help them if they hear about us and they come. We never turn anyone away, but we ask them if they would to please check their own area, because these are the people that we're trying to reach.
Now, you have a lot of volunteers who work with your organization, and because you serve so many immigrant families and many people who have recently come from Spanish-speaking countries, that's been a real opportunity for high school students, too, volunteering to help but also practice their Spanish.
If we can get the Spanish teacher at our high school to what we ask them is, if some of your students come over and help us, can they get extra credit for this? And most of the time, they are willing to do this for us. So it's quite interesting to see that the students interacting with the Spanish-speaking families, and they get a big kick out of it too, that they can practice their Spanish. Spanish people speak quickly. In the classes, they don't speak that.
Right. Some real-world experience. And you've been helping a lot of people. Juanita Scott, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yes.
Juanita Scott of the Children's Clothes Closet in Panora, Iowa. We're focusing on organizations that help newcomers to the state of Iowa, particularly refugee populations, this hour. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In the last year, just under 1,000 refugees from many different countries around the world came to Iowa. And of course, there are many people who've come from many, many countries through the recent decade and decades. And when people come as refugees to the United States, they often come with very little, but a great deal of motivation to survive and thrive. This hour, we're focusing on the organizations around the state that help refugee populations. And my next guest is Amy Doyle. She's Director of Advocacy and Programs at Ethnic Minorities of Burma Advocacy and Resource Center, which is better known as EMBARC. EMBARC has sites in Waterloo, Des Moines, and Marshalltown. And Amy's with us from Des Moines. Hello, Amy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And give me an idea. Burmese refugees are one of the largest populations of refugees that we have in the state of Iowa right now. Give me a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of this population.
They are the largest refugee group here in the state of Iowa. We estimate currently there's between 7,000 and 10,000. And those refugees are from Burma is a small Southeastern Asian country, yes? So they're about the size of Texas, but with incredible racial diversity. So you've got 8 major ethnic groups that have resettled bits and pieces from each community. Unlike in the United States, those ethnic groups have their own cultures, their own languages, their own traditions. So when we say refugees from Burma, it's not really the same as, you know, refugees from Syria or refugees from you know, like Vietnam, where they spoke the same language and probably had similar culture. These are all very diverse
within their own
ethnic group.
Right. It's a very diverse country. It's also the home of the longest running civil war in the world. So this is a place where a lot of people have been in very difficult situations for a long time. And the refugees that come to the United States, again, this is one of those situations where this is part of a very long journey, right?
Yes. Absolutely. So, as you mentioned, Burma is the site of the longest running civil war in the world, 65 plus years. So these are refugees who have spent decades in circumstances that we don't imagine, right? So you see those, a ethnic group would rise to power, maybe focus on persecuting some of the other minority groups, and then militia would come through, children forced into armies, things like that, buildings being burned down, entire ethnic groups forcibly resettled. So that's a way of life, not just like a couple years of bad events. Your grandparents lived that way, your parents lived that way, and probably eventually at some point they chose to either flee your home so that you could be safer in a resettlement camp, a refugee camp, or they were forcibly moved there.
Now, you've been with EMBARC for a little over 2 years now. How old is the organization itself?
EMBARC is very young. It was founded informally in 2011 when community leaders from the refugee community came together and said, you know, we're really struggling here and our communities are not thriving the way that we had hoped. And that's when they met our executive director, Henny Orr, who at that time worked for the state of Iowa. They received 501c3 status in 2013. So we're just entering, just finished, I guess, our third, sorry, 2017, just finished our third formal year.
What do you see as the primary goal of the organization?
We believe that, well, it's self-sufficiency through self-help, right? We want all refugees and all immigrants to the state to be successful, independent members of Iowa. And we believe that's feasible, but with assistance, right? So we exist to be that bridge to help refugees access those services and programs they need to become successful and independent.
So tell me about some of the programs that you facilitate. What do you do to help people?
We do many different programs. We do, our biggest program is a partnership with AmeriCorps. It's called Refugee Rise. That is a program that helps refugees find places like DMACC or service providers like Iowa Legal Aid, all with the goal of providing economic opportunities, so job training, job skills, or higher education. You know, you want to get a better job or you'd like to get your high school equivalency. How do you do that if your English skills aren't quite up to par? We try to connect you with those resources. We also run a community, we call it community-based ESL, which are ESL classes for refugees, but instead of just one teacher who probably doesn't speak your native language, we do co-taught classes, one American, one refugee teacher who also speaks the language of Burma. And then we have two navigator programs. We call them Parent and Health Navigator. And those are where we take bilingual community navigators, and they receive education focused on American rules and expectations, whether it relates to parenting and having children and sending them to school, or whether it relates to our healthcare system. Those community navigators receive that training, and then they go back to their community. They host what we call learning circles in people's apartments. So you might have five refugees or 10 or even 12, and they all come and listen to the lessons that their navigators have learned in their own language so then they can have it and then share it that way with their community.
Now, where the adults who are coming from Burma may have very little or no English when they get here, children tend to learn English really quickly, especially once they start going to school. Is there a real challenge for parents whose children are in the educational system, for parents who may not understand the expectations for the parents when their kids are in school?
Yes, absolutely. I think having children is always exciting, but when you have a language barrier and also a cultural barrier, you know, a lot of refugees who come here from refugee camps, their experiences with schools are not at all similar to how American schools run. You know, so they're, you really sent your child to school, and it was maybe more like a one-room schoolhouse, not a school how we have schools. There was no preschool, no kindergarten, no early Head Start, things like that. And there certainly wasn't the level of administration, you know, a teacher versus a counselor versus a social worker versus an administrator. Those things are very complicated just to understand conceptually, much less to understand how they're impacting your role as a parent.
What?
So we do,
What drew you into this organization? You started out as a volunteer for Embark. What was it that you saw that made you think I need to do something to help here?
At the time, I was working for a corporation, and we did a fundraiser, like a donation drive. And Embark was the recipient, and we went to deliver just laundry baskets filled with, you know, like dish soap and laundry soap, basic household necessities. And when we took them to the apartment complexes where some of the refugee families were living, I was very dismayed, I think, to see so many families and so many children living in what had been unaware. I think that there were families living in those states, you know, 8, 9, 10 people in an apartment, sometimes not enough beds, sometimes not appropriate weather-appropriate clothing. And then the more I learned about, this is an enormous community, and they are in many ways struggling with some of the very basic needs that we would assume are all being met here. And then the longer I volunteered and the more involved I got, you know, you fall in love with the people, and you see these families who come here with nothing but hope and you want to do your very best to help make sure that they can get there.
And we've been talking a lot about what you can do to help the Burmese refugees. What do you think this new population of new Iowans brings to the state of Iowa?
You know, these are refugees that echo to me the same immigrants that founded this country, the same ideas. They come here and they want to work and have a safe life for their children. They want to buy a house. They want to put down roots. They're fine to move into a trade and work there for 40 or 50 years if that means their children will be safe, they'll have education, and their kids will have all the opportunities that higher education needs. You know, most refugees that come from camps especially, they're great. They never had formal schooling. And if they did, it was at the most up to like what we would think of like a middle school grade. So they are so excited. Free public education, you know, the ability to find a job and be able to buy a home. They believe in the American dream. And they want very much to make it come to make it true for their own families and for their communities.
Amy, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
Amy Doyle is Director of Advocacy and Programs at Ethnic Minorities of Burma Advocacy and Resource Center, which is better known as EMBARC and has sites in Waterloo, Des Moines, and Marshalltown. The Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County is an organization that wasn't founded with the idea that they would be supporting refugee populations or new immigrants. They were created to support specific neighborhoods where the residents had a diversity of needs, and that diversity just continues to increase. Andy Coghill-Behrens is here with me now. He is Family Support Director at Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County. Hello, Andy.
Good morning, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And first of all, describe Neighborhood Centers for us, because these aren't typical social services organizations.
No, we're not. We are very neighborhood-based. We have two centers here in Iowa City, one on the southeast side of town and one on the west side of town, and we're located in very high concentrations of low-income housing. So we don't start with a specific cause that we are working on. We were not designed to address refugee services. We just start with the population that we serve. We work with people on the best day of their life or the worst day of their life. And what we do is constantly changing depending on the shifting needs of the communities we're serving.
So today, as these needs continue to shift, you have a very large Sudanese population as part of your neighborhood centers, right?
We do. The Pheasant Ridge neighborhood on the west side of town has a very large Sudanese population, and the Sudanese people are coming with either political asylee status, refugee status, and some on the green card lottery.
And with your other neighborhood center, tell me a little bit about the population there. We've been talking about a lot of refugees from the Congo coming.
Yes. Our Broadway neighborhood center does see a lot of refugees coming from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We have been able to develop some services basically to serve those refugee populations. The neighborhood centers has four key components. We do early childhood programming. We do youth programming in schools. We do some community development, bringing neighbors together to meet neighbors. And then we also have our family support programming, which is really where we've been able to address the needs of the refugee population.
So as I mentioned, this is not the mission that you were formed with, but as more and more refugees came to Iowa City, came to Johnson County. And, you know, with these families, as I mentioned earlier, they don't have a lot of control over where they're settled when they first come to the United States. But it's my understanding that Iowa City has become a draw for a lot of people who've been resettled into the United States, people who may have gone to South Dakota or Nebraska or somewhere else, coming to be with family and friends that have settled in Iowa City. Is that true?
That is very true. A lot of families do get resettled to other areas of the state or of the country, and then they are drawn to Iowa City and Johnson County for opportunity, whether that is education. We have a lot of entry-level job positions. Employment is a big draw to Johnson County. Families have just found the education system for their kids to be wonderful, too.
With adjusting to meet the needs of the people living in your neighborhoods, what are some of the greatest challenges that you have to help people with when they have this asylee status and are trying to negotiate this world? You know, many, many refugee families start with some assistance and then grow and do without assistance as time goes on. Many families do. But how do you help them navigate this very complicated world?
Obviously, the biggest barrier is language. So helping connect families with English language classes, adults with English language classes. And at the neighborhood centers, we try to hire from within our communities. So our family support staff actually have native languages of English, Spanish, Arabic, Portuguese, and French and Swahili. So we are able to meet people where they're at and help them navigate the system, which is very unfamiliar to them, of housing, employment, childcare, their children's education, all those things that people need to navigate in order to be successful and be successfully resettled in the United States.
Well, we were just talking a moment ago with Amy Doyle about how, you know, children learn English very quickly and, of course, are faced with all the same expectations of all the other students that they're going to school with. Their parents may not have much familiarity with the school system. But then also, children of refugees, children of immigrants often become the translator, the ambassador for that family. Do you have a way of offering support to those kids who are doing this important work?
Our family support staff really tries to get children out of that role of being the ambassador to the bigger world. Feel that power dynamic there just can result in some unforeseen circumstances. So we have tried to build very good relationships with schools so that the student family advocates at the schools can kind of jump into that role with the refugee families and the immigrant families that we're working with. And our family support staff and the student family advocates work very closely together.
What do you see as your greatest need right now to meet the needs of your neighborhoods?
I would say that housing is really the largest need of the refugee community. Iowa City has seen a kind of a drop off in the amount of affordable housing that we have, with the loss of some very significant housing complexes. And refugee families are faced with issues of having to pass a background check, having to pass a credit check. And a lot of those things are not something that they are able to get through, not having that background to get checked or having that credit to get checked. Additionally, the amount of money that new refugees are given for housing is really not sufficient for them to come up with 2 months' deposit on a new apartment. And then finally, a lot of times we're dealing with large families that are unable to find an apartment or a house which is able to adequately house their family. So that is really what we've identified as one of the biggest needs in Iowa City and Johnson County.
And do you have an opportunity for people to get involved if this is a cause that they care about?
Absolutely. There are a lot of really good organizations in Iowa City. The Center for Worker Justice, there's IC Compassion, neighborhood centers, of course. All of these organizations are more than willing to have people come and help. We have lots of volunteer opportunities for people who want to get involved.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity.
Andy Coghill-Behrens is Family Support Director at Neighborhood Centers of Johnson County, an organization that wasn't founded with the idea of helping immigrant or refugee families, but it's a role that they have grown into over the years. This hour, we've been talking with people from many different organizations around the state that support refugee families in the state of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Anna Williams, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. We had production assistance today from Chelsea Hoy. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.